a lot of times when nutritionists formulate for ruminant diets, they balance for lysine and methionine, and those aren't all of the amino acids. And canola meal is, if you balance out the amino acids and compare it to the amino acids in milk, they're very similar. So I think it sort of covers you a little bit better, you know, with having something that's more complete relative to milk, and the nitrogen efficiency tends to be higher.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Welcome to the Feed Science Podcast Show. My name is Adam Fahrenholz, and I'm coming to you on behalf of Wise Genetics from North Carolina State University. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with nonlinear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Kemin invites you to optimize animal feed quality and safety with our portfolio of solutions. Learn more at kemin.com/ag. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge.
We appreciate all of our audience listening on your favorite podcast app or watching on YouTube. Please do like and subscribe, all the good things. As well as if you've got interest in a topic we haven't covered or interest in learning more about a topic that we've covered in the past, please do feel free to leave us a comment. Today, we're going to continue talking about some things on the ruminant side, which we've done in a number of podcasts in the past, but we're going to talk about an ingredient that we haven't covered to date. And so I'm excited about that. Always like learning something new. My guest today is Dr. Essie Evans. Essie is the owner of E&E Technical Advisory Services. Essie, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Adam.
If you wouldn't mind, introduce yourself a little bit to the audience and give us a bit of your background and how you came to be doing what you're doing today.
Hey, well, I'm a native of Maryland. I moved to Canada to get my master's and PhD, stayed here, started working for research for a feed company called SureGain, which was the largest feed company in Canada. They moved their office, so I started my own company and had several clients, one of which is Canola Council of Canada, and I've been working with them since about 2011.
So now the audience knows which ingredient we're going to talk about. We're going to be talking about canola meal. I'm down here in North Carolina, and of course we see things like canola, you know, working itself into, you know, maybe some real specialty rations. We see it in the human food side, but it's obviously kind of a northern crop, small grains, hardy type of a thing that we see more in the North U.S. and up into Canada. So what are just, you know, we're going to kind of go through the whole conversation, but what are the kind of general research things that have happened that have supported the use of something like canola in I guess, dairy cow rations primarily?
Well, canola is, you may have heard of rapeseed meal, and canola originally began as a modification of rapeseed meal. There are some anti-nutritional factors in rapeseed, so the geneticist worked to get rid of those, that's erucic acid and glucosinolates, and produced a meal, canola from Canada and ola for oil. The oil is pretty much very similar to olive oil. So high oleic acid oil. And the meal that was left needed a home, so there was a bit of work to try to produce something that could be used as a protein ingredient. So it's an ingredient that has approximately 40% crude protein. Similar to what soybean meal would be used in the past. So that became introduced, I'd say, in the mid-1970s. So fairly recent when it comes to ingredients. Because if you compare that to soybean meal, it's been used, you know, forever. So.
Well, first of all, after having been in the industry for a while, I started my undergraduate work in 2002, and I've always been in the feed. I'm going to tell you, I have just learned why it is called canola. I have never heard that before. So for those that didn't catch that, so it's Canada and Ola for oil. I had no idea. I knew that it was a variant, so to speak, of coming out of rapeseed. I did not know that. That's really cool. I'm excited that I have learned something new today. That's really, really neat. I'm also curious, before we get into some of the nutrition stuff, on the do we process canola meal the same way or ways that we do soybean? I mean, and obviously soybean meal, we have solvent extracted and we have mechanically pressing. What's the process for producing the canola meal?
It's basically the same. The seed comes in, it's little black seeds that look like mustard seeds. So it's a little bit different there, but it does go in and there's primarily solvent extraction. I think there's only two plants in Canada that have expeller, that are large plants that produce expeller meal. Most of that goes into poultry because it's higher in fat.
Got it. So what are then some of the other, I guess, nutritional profiles that have made it maybe in the past somewhat tricky to use in certain diets? I know that in some of our previous discussions, some of the show notes, you've talked about wanting to look into things like lactation diets versus what the current research shows today.
I think that the main thing and the reason why it sort of gravitated more to ruminants is you can't take away the seed hull like you can with soy. So it's more fibrous. And, you know, it's not as suitable for all classes of pigs. Like pigs can use it. It's also very, very much used in laying hens, but not so much in broilers and, you know, animals that really can't handle fiber that well.
So if my understanding is correct, a lot of the trials that in early research that was done in using it in the ruminant, especially in the dairy side, were these kind of mid lactation or any of kind of the switching diets is where they would get used, because there was some concern about the various different protein fractions and how available they were and that sort of stuff, if I've got that right. But now we're starting to see that maybe there's some more benefit to production and persistency in the lactation cycle itself. Is that correct? Do I have that right?
Yeah, I think, you know, being a new ingredient, it's sort of been sort of like a continuous improvement process a bit. And a young lad just finished his graduate work recently, and I read his thesis, and he did a great job of, his name is Jordan, and he put together canola in the 70s, canola in the 80s, and it became sort of more stabilized in what we're seeing today in about the 90s and things. And some of the techniques that were used back then were a little bit, you know, not quite what we're doing today to try to look at the protein and how to value the protein. So those are some changes.
And so from your perspective, then, some of the protein fractions have been misidentified or misunderstood of what their actual value is then.
You know, when things first started, first you're feeding cows for protein, and then they decided that, well, we can look at protein and see how soluble or insoluble it is. And if it's more soluble, it's going to be digested by the rumen bugs. The way that this was initially looked at was that we used nylon bags, and if the material came out of the nylon bags, we made the assumption it's soluble, the bugs ate it. Well, what we found is that that's not really true. It comes out of the bag, it's soluble, but the bugs really can't digest it as rapidly as they for some proteins as for others. So if there's a lot of disulfide bonds, which there is in the protein napin, which is in canola meal, then that's much more difficult for the bugs to digest. So that ends up being what's called either bypass protein or rumen undegraded protein. So really, a lot of the older data would suggest that most of the the protein in canola would be digested in the rumen. And in fact, it's quite the opposite. So pound for pound, we're seeing as much material going into the bypass fraction as with soybean meal, which is sort of was always the gold standard. And even though there's less protein, so it does have a very high RUP or bypass protein value.
My guest today, again, is Dr. Essie Evans. Essie's the owner of E&D Technical Advisory Services. So with some of those ways of looking at the protein and it being bypassed, not bypasses, versus the other proteins that we might use, other oil seed sources of protein, grain sources of protein, we got lots of them out there. Do we have concerns with using canola on things like milk production versus maintaining body condition and trying to maintain, you know, both the milk they were trying to get and the cow herself, I guess?
A good question, because a lot of times when you're seeing more milk, you're seeing a loss of body condition or reproduction, especially in early lactation. And canola has been a bit of an enigma, I'd say, because when you look at it on paper, it looks like you've got something that's fairly high in fiber. It's going to be low in energy. It's got less protein than many of the other major proteins. But in fact, we're seeing these really good results with it. So there's been a lot of studies done. And I think that the conclusion that I made is that it's not like the parameters that we're using are not correctly identifying the material. So there's some attributes to it that aren't in your file. So if, you know, you're running a computer program and you want to substitute A for B or something, you expect that at the end, if you have all your parameters, your animals are going to behave pretty much the same, unless there, you know, there's a change in intake. But with canola, what we're seeing in multiple meta-analysis and things is that we're getting more milk than expected. And in some cases, we're seeing greater body condition score or the same. We're not seeing the loss. And the reproduction has been on par with that of when animals are receiving soybean meal.
Okay. And so to your point, it's one of those things when And for those of us that are familiar, like you said, like with formulation in a matrix, while we'd like to have every possible thing one could ever think of built into every ingredient to and have it all in the matrix, there's a lack of practical ability to do that. But especially with a new ingredient, maybe there are some things that we wouldn't consider in the matrix for other similar ingredients in the past, which now take on a higher degree of importance that we didn't know we should be formulating on, or at least formulating with consideration. And so is some of that perhaps having to do with how the oil itself is different in the canola seed and in the different levels of things like the oleic, linoleic acids and all that are different than the constant oil seeds like soybeans that we've used forever?
Yeah, that's one factor. The major oil is oleic acid, about 60% oleic acid. And up until recently, I'd say within the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, there have been studies looking at the specific fatty acids. And oleic acid is different in that it's not hydrogenated to the same extent in the rumen. And it also contributes to improved digestion for some, you know, unexplained reason. We don't understand that just yet. And most other oil seeds are high in C18 too. Like if we have corn gluten meal or canola or soybean meal, those tend to be high in C18 too instead of 1. And the reaction is a little bit different. The other thing, Adam, is that a lot of times when nutritionists formulate for ruminant diets, they balance for lysine and methionine. And those aren't all of the amino acids. And canola meal is, if you balance out the amino acids and compare it to the amino acids in milk, they're very similar. So I think it sort of covers you a little bit better, you know, with having something that's more complete relative to milk. And the nitrogen efficiency tends to be higher.
What is, I apologize, you may have already said this, I may have kind of skipped over it. What does the oil composition of the canola seed look like versus like the soybean meal or the soybean, sorry?
Okay, the canola is, first it has a little bit more fat than many of your other ingredients, so it's a little bit higher. And the other thing is that it's monounsaturated, not polyunsaturated. So the distiller's grains and the soybeans have more of the polyunsaturated fatty acids. A couple things with that, why we have to be careful in ruminant nutrition with that is that those can result in some trans fatty acids that can affect milk fat synthesis. And you may have heard of fat depression. So we have to be careful with how much of that. With the saturated fatty acids or the monounsaturated fatty acids, it's much less of a concern. So that's a little bit of a benefit.
From your perspective, and you know, you've been consulting in the industry and doing a lot of things with dairy cattle for a long time, how I was going to ask this question. It would apply from everything you've described, it would apply to what you've learned working with canola, but I imagine it applies to other things as well. How do you deal with the idea of we're doing these things and sometimes they're in controlled trials and they're at a university system or we're doing contract research and it is very controlled and sometimes it's more in the field, but my nutrient matrix and the literature and everything else that I have and what I have formulated to, and maybe I even have analysis already of all of my ingredients and all of those things say that when I feed this, this is what will happen. And then I look over here and I do the feeding and it's not what I expected to see, right? What's the process by which we say, okay, why didn't what I thought would happen? And how do I discover what was either not there in my matrix, which is a lot of what it sounds like you've discovered with the canola of this was supposed to do this, it didn't do that. Now we have to go figure out why. What does that investigation process look like?
That's been done. There's so much research on canola that we were able to have so far 5 meta-analyses where they tried to put the data together and say, okay, let's look at this different ways and see what's happening. The first one was done by Hootenin, and his conclusion was that the product is undervalued, which says, like you were just talking about, something seems to be missing. You know, there's some kind of a value proposition that we're not taking into account. And there's been 4 subsequent meta-analyses, all of which favored canola. Now, the reason why you want to have the right values is if you have something in the ration and say, for instance, canola price goes up, you take it out, you put something else in, production goes down, you're not going to be a hero on the farm. And in the reverse, you think, well, I put it in and the milk went up. That's also a problem because then the producer looks at you and says, Adam, why didn't you do that a year ago? You know,
That's right.
You've lost either way. So we want these values correct. And I think you've hit the nail on the head. And what I'm trying to do is come up with what is the value proposition that we're not looking at correctly. What can we do to define that, you know, a little bit more? So Canola Council invested in some research that was done by Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada. A lot of people would have heard of Alain LaPierre as the primary researcher. What she did was multiple catheterization and looking at absorption of individual nutrients. So we fed the standard, which would be soybean meal, canola meal. And what she found is that there were no differences in basically the energy value or the digestible absorbable protein value, which isn't what you would get from your feed matrix. So, you know, we need to come up with a better way of trying to define it. And I've been going down and trying to find out what that could be. I think some of it is the better amino acid balance. You know, for some of the amino acids that we're not looking at, like the branch chain amino acids, leucine, isoleucine, valine, typically ruminant nutritionists don't formulate for those. I mean, it just becomes such a headache when you're trying to balance everything out. So those are some of the things that I think that we're covering a little bit better. Arginine is another one. Methionine and cysteine. In most of the monogastric models, methionine and cysteine are looked at together for the sulfur amino acids. The ruminant system that are out there right now, they just look at methionine. So that could also be a difference. So, you know, I'm trying to find out, looking at some of the folks that are key in the industry, like Cornell University and that, and see what they're doing and how they would approach it. They have been doing a better job at looking and identifying the RUP fraction, way, way better than NRC or NASEM has been doing.
I always find it really interesting to think about these things. And, you know, we've been feeding animals for obviously thousands of years, and we've been doing it in some sort of a controlled and produced way for hundreds. And yet still we're learning things similar to what you mentioned about the amino acids. As I think about, you know, only 20 years ago, and we would make research diets for poultry and swine, faculty that were doing work in there, lysine and methionine were in everything. And then every once in a while, maybe somebody was like, I think I need to actually adjust threonine a little bit. And now we see research diets coming in. And here at the feed mill at NC State, I have every feed grade amino acid known to man that we have to keep on hand, because somebody's like, well, no, now we've learned more, and we've learned more about balancing. We've learned more about how to analyze the different ingredients, and all these things are important. And so we will use lysine and methionine and tryptophan and threonine and valine and isoleucine and arginine. And it's, you know, as the technology improves and we can analyze more and we can play with the data more, do the meta-analysis like you just talked about, where we can kind of take all of these things and throw them together and see. And it's amazing. There's just always something new to learn, and it never stops. And that's, I think it's really neat and kind of makes it an interesting, you know, it's always an interesting puzzle to chase, I think.
It's time for our famous three.
WiseNetics turns podcast airtime into brand authority. We don't sell ads, we elevate voices. If you're ready to boost your authority in the industry, access WiseNetics.com and speak with a brand authority specialist. Let's transform expertise into influence. Starting now.
On that, before we close out, I did want to ask you, and it, you know, not necessarily specifically to your work with canola, but it's certainly a part of the conversation, but you're obviously very interested in kind of finding out this puzzle. This you can tell that, like, this is fun for you to go through and like, okay, well, if this, then that, but not this, then why was this doing whatever it is? And we do know that we've got a number of folks in our audience that are graduate students and going through. And so whenever I've talk to somebody that's very clearly still really enjoying the work they're doing. I always want to ask, like, what would be your advice to those students or those people in their early careers on how to all throughout the career try to, you know, always be enjoying what you're doing? Like, what does that process look like for you?
You just got to really get a thrill out of everything that you learn new, you know? So you see something different and you just say, wow, you know, that's just fun. And if it's not fun, do something else. You know, it's every day is a joy.
I think put very simply, that's a great answer. If it's not fun, which doesn't mean that it's not hard, and it doesn't mean that it's not stressful and frustrating sometimes, but if in the grand scheme of things, if it's, I mean, I'm just not having any fun, you know, learning about what I have to learn about to do my job, then that's probably time to find something that piques your interest a little more. I think that's a really good piece of advice, really.
I think, you know, sometimes you're working away and it seems like nothing's happening, and then suddenly, you know, a new equation or something comes up, and it just makes everything you've done in the past worthwhile.
Right. Look at and you get to go look back at all the unsolved or unanswered questions that have been, you know, you've been kind of been haunting you for however long. Like, why won't this? And you go, oh my goodness! Like, just kind of out of nowhere, this came up, and now I know why that happened. And I've wondered why that happened forever. And now I do, because now I have the tool, or we stumbled into, like you said, a new way to analyze or something like that. And then you go, okay, finally answered that question. And what new questions does that bring up? Yeah, I think that's a great way to describe it. Well, I appreciate your time today, Essie. Again, for everybody, my guest today has been Dr. Essie Evans, the owner of E&E Technical Advisory Services. She's in Canada, and she's doing a lot of work on the ruminant side, and especially looking at the advantages and possibilities of using canola in lactating dairy rations. Essie, we really appreciate your time today. I had a lot of fun. I thank you for your conversation.
Yes, thank you, Adam. Appreciate it.
Again, on behalf of Wisenetics, I'm Adam Fahrenholz. We appreciate you listening or watching the Feed Science Podcast Show, and we will talk to you the next time.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.